Welcome to the Naughty Child Podcast with me, Richard.
And me, Polly.
I'm the dad.
And I'm the daughter.
Getting called out in the middle of the night to go carve a cow, to do a cesarean.
It's the closest thing to farming you can do in the middle of Bristol.
And then mum put on YouTube and then now it's there for the world to see, so it's great.
England were very chirpy.
And I think I only cried like 4 times, but they just happened to get all 4 times on camera, okay?
Locked myself in a procedure room.
Whether it shows something about me or whether it just shows I'm a little bit stupid.
I love people and I love cricket.
Suddenly I'm out on a helicopter because I can go on a glacier.
It's been the longest year ever, hasn't it?
My dog is now called Jimmy Anderson.
So I learned the anthem because I really genuinely thought they would make us sing it.
So Polly, we went to Northumberland.
We did. That was just over a week ago, wasn't it? Second week of
it was absolutely brilliant. I loved it.
It was really nice. We didn't have the best weather, it would be fair to say. It rained a lot more than usual. But yeah, it was very, very nice to. I was quite ill, but other than that, it was quite nice to somewhat relax.
Yeah, great to get away. But back to school for me this week. But you're not back to school yet.
I'm never going back to school. Yeah, I head back to Manchester this week, so uni starts on Tuesday, which is fun. But only 3 weeks left, which is...
Of your entire first year?
Yes.
That has gone by in a flash.
Yeah, it's also a bit, not stressful, but, you know, got a couple of assignments that haven't been started, so need to crack on. But other than that, it's all good.
Been some big happenings in the world of women's cricket in the last couple of weeks.
Let's chat about England senior team first. They wrapped up the tour in New Zealand, finished with a loss, which wasn't amazing, but Sophie Devine had a bit of a day out, scored a century. But what are kind of your conclusions from the tour of New Zealand?
Well, there were some big winners, aren't there? So Maya Bouchier comes to mind straight away as someone who's been given an opportunity here, probably actually because of the WPL, and has stepped up and made that opener's slot her own. And so I think with almost certainty now, we can say first game of the T20 World Cup, Maya Bouchier will be opening the batting. So really, really pleased for her that she's, you know, shown such confidence, really, to take her opportunity in doing that. Charlie Dean, another one that comes to mind. I just think with Charlie Dean, she's our best all-rounder.
I completely agree.
And that's a problem.
Well, yeah.
But Natasha Brunt is a fantastic batter who can bowl quite decently. With Charlie Dean, it feels like she goes under the radar. Mm. The fact that she is the fastest woman to 50 wickets in ODIs in the history of the women's game, that's really weird, isn't it? That no one's noticed that almost, but she's so consistent. And it occurred to me that if I had to choose an all-rounder to bat at number 7 for England, and I had to choose Danny Gibson or Charlie Dean, I would choose Charlie Dean every time.
Yeah, it's an interesting point because, as you say, she does go under the radar a bit. And I think part of that has to do with the fact she's a bowler who can bat rather than a batter that can bowl. Because her batting performances, they aren't this explosive, dynamic performance. It's safe. We spoke about it a couple of weeks ago with her and Amy Jones, and actually what they did in forming that partnership, it really steadied England. And actually that's what Charlie Dean can do really well. Her bowling is fantastic. I remember seeing her, don't think I saw her on debut, but a couple of games into her debut, she was picking up wickets very quickly. And a lot of people will start their career by doing that because they're kind of unknown and people don't know how to play them, but she's managed to continue that and has got even better and is now, I think, second or third in the ICC bowling rankings. I think for T20 cricket, is it? I think it's T20 cricket.
Right, yeah. I don't read the rankings, to be fair.
Yeah, I saw it earlier in the week. I know Kate Cross is in the rankings again as well. Obviously, Sophie Eccleston is still there.
She is really good, is Charlie Dean. And I think what we need is stability in our middle order, because what England have shown time and time again is that we can go from 2 down to 6 down very, very rapidly and regularly do. And Charlie Dean is someone who has and continues to rescue us from those situations. In fact, probably her most famous innings was a rescue effort like that at Lord's back in 2022 against India. Mm. Again, she, you know, whilst other people were getting themselves out in what was quite annoying and silly ways, she just batted sensibly and accumulated runs because we were going for a very low total, I seem to remember, 150 odd, I think, in an ODI, which we were falling short of. And she very nearly got us there.
Yeah, and to be fair, I think she would have done it because the way we've seen her performances in the coming years, that's how it's been. Yeah, so fantastic performances from Charlie Dean. And I guess in terms of England as a whole, obviously you raise a concern about the middle order, and I think that is a problem. But I think the focus will have to, after the World Cup, be on ODIs because I think that's the weak point. But at the moment, actually getting England to play T20s really well, get a really high total on the board, I think that is kind of the priority for the World Cup. And yeah, we've spoken about John Lewis's style of cricket, and I get kind of go big or go home. But to an extent, I think England do need to play a little bit more conservatively. It'll be interesting to see over the English summer how they play once they're regularly playing cricket and see if that makes an impact. But yeah, I think it is on the whole a positive tour. And there were some good individual performances as we've mentioned.
Yeah, I think you can't take anything for granted in these situations. You know, we lost a series to Sri Lanka. So to go to New Zealand and win is definitely an improvement on what happened before. We went to India and again, we won the T20 series in India. Test match didn't go so well, but again, that's really, really positive, isn't it? You know, going into that T20 World Cup, we're contenders. We're nowhere near, you know, nailed on for that trophy.
You're saying we're not favourites? We're not favourites? Mad. But I don't think Australia are favourites, though.
You'd think this is a really good opportunity for India.
Yeah.
A really good opportunity for India. But then I'm assuming that wickets in Bangladesh are similar to Indian conditions, and they are not necessarily. Australia, of course, have just been touring in Bangladesh, so they will have a bit of an advantage there, I think.
More advantage for the Aussies. Let's touch on the under-19s team as well, because they've been out in Sri Lanka. They've finished their T20 series and ODI series. Again, similar to the senior team, didn't end their tour as they would have wanted. They got a little bit thrashed by Sri Lanka in the final ODI, lost by 100 and something runs. But I guess as a whole, they are a younger squad to the one that went to the World Cup. They're a very different side. But I think it's kind of interesting ahead of, the next cycle of the under-19 World Cup, which will take place next January, probably. I suppose half those players will play and half of them won't. So yeah, I think the England side will probably be very, obviously personnel will be very different to the one we saw last time. But I think even in terms of style of play and obviously leadership will be different. I'm very intrigued to see what that looks like in January.
Yes, I really enjoyed the under-19s. So because it was all on YouTube, I got to see quite a bit of it, which was really, really good to see. There were some, I thought, encouraging performances. Really pleased for Davina Perrin. I thought she performed really, really well when given the opportunity in those T20 games. I thought she was, you know, one of our top performers. Alexa Stonehouse as well, friend of the pod, really bowled really, really well in the T20s. Again, stood out. And you see, you look at our team and compare them to the Sri Lanka team and the Australian team. We've got players there who've played the 100, who play regional cricket every game. You know, that's really, really, you know, gives us a real advantage. The experience that we have in our side is vast compared to the other teams. I think Josie Groves, as captain, performed admirably as well. Hit a really impressive 50 in the first T20 as well. She got injured towards the end, so wasn't captain in the last couple of games. But I think she can take a lot of encouragement from that too. So there were some really, really good performances, and it just seems they have a lot of fun when they're away. You know, and that's, I enjoy seeing that as much as anything else. You know, that they're going to amazing places in the world having a lot of fun together, playing hard, enjoying it, you know, getting a chance to go and see the country as well. And it just seems like a really nice thing to do. And just a really, it sets up another generation. It gives you a little window view of how things might be in the future for the England team.
Yeah, definitely. And as we mentioned, Sri Lanka have been really, really good. Obviously, they do have a slight home advantage being on home soil. They know their own conditions, but they have been very impressive. And I think I mentioned in the podcast before, a couple more Chamari Attapattis coming through. And that is very, very encouraging for the next generation of Sri Lankan cricket.
One of them was only 14.
I know. I saw that. And she was one of the best players. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Just incredible. So those tournaments are always very exciting because you know that when you're watching it, you are probably watching someone in the next generation who's potentially going to be the best player, who's going to be the next Nat Sivabrunt, or who's going to be the next Megan Shute or whatever. And you're watching it, and that's pretty exciting because I guess that you can follow their career until they make their international debut and things like that. So yeah, that's been a really good series, and it will be interesting, I think, to see how many of those players who haven't already go on to make senior debuts this season. Because we'll talk about something later, actually, that we've been working on. But when I was looking at stats and information of young players, out of that under-19 team, I think 14 out of the 15 of them have gone on to make senior debuts. Now, before that, a lot of them, I think there were maybe 3 or 4 that played in the 100 and a handful that had professional contracts. But yeah, the majority now have pro contracts, have made their senior debut of regulars in their team, and a lot have been picked up in the 100. And that is pretty cool because that just shows that the pathway is working.
Yes, there's real progression there,
yeah,
within the structures of the game, isn't there? So it's, yeah, it's great to see. And it'll be interesting to see, especially those under-19 players, you know, like Harris Paveley, for example, coming back to Sparks, having had that competitive cricket for a few weeks, just as the season's about to start, they're going to hit the ground running and, you know, potentially have a really, really good start to the season.
Yeah. Well, speaking of a team who will probably have a decent season, let's chat a bit about Thunder, because there's been a lot going on with them recently. Firstly, they announced 2 overseas signings. I mean, I didn't know if there was a rule for how many overseas you can have, but the sounds of it, it's a free-for-all. In fact, actually, I don't think they will play at the same time. I could be wrong. Okay. I have a feeling that they're for different periods. So I think Georgia Vole is going to be there for the Charlotte Edwards Cup and the last Rachel Hayer-Flint games before the 100.
Mm-hmm.
And then Katie Mack is going to be there, maybe for the start of the season or maybe for the back end of the season. I can't remember which way around it is, but I actually don't think they're going to clash. So it must be one per region, which I think is the case anyway. But they're 2 pretty big signings because Georgia Vole, friend of the pod, really big hitter and very exciting player. She's still only 20, I think.
Wow.
But has done really well in WBBL and domestic cricket. And then Katie Mack, of course, has won the WBBL with the Adelaide Strikers. She's a very good batter as well, and bowler. So, lot of potential there. And another reason we want to chat about Thunder is because their documentary came out earlier in the week.
I really enjoyed it.
Yeah,
really enjoyed it. And a couple of games that we were there at as well featured in it. And I guess what they did is they structured a narrative, didn't they, around... Yeah. You know, bad start, disappointment, things are going wrong, and then things turn around and eventually they make finals day. It was amazing seeing that bright sunshine on finals day.
And they played knowing what was happening.
The whole pitch was underwater by the end of the day.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was so well put together. And yeah, the production values there at Lanx TV are so high, aren't they? And they really, really do things well.
Mm.
And, you know, that came across, and it just really demonstrates what can be done when you put a little investment and priority into the women's team. So really well done to Thunder.
Yeah, I thought it was really good, and I like that they zoomed in on a couple of players. So, of course, you had Alex Hartley, Kate Cross, Captain Edith Raukeld, also had Liv Bell as a young player who actually the Charlotte Edwards Cup was kind of her breakout moment for Thunder. And in the absence of Sophie Eccleston, she took a lot of wickets. So I thought it was, yeah, really well put together. And also touched on and off the pitch, which I think was really important.
Mm-hmm.
And got me very, very excited for this season. So hopefully, this is the thing you want with a documentary, that then they go and win silverware. So hopefully the cameras will be out this season as well. And, you know, when they do the double, it's all captured.
I guess what comes across is that Thunder really, really, really want to win stuff.
Yeah.
And are really putting their money where their mouth is. And that doesn't necessarily guarantee you success. But they've got a new coach in Chris Reid. They've, as we said, got new players in.
Mm.
And the players that they have got, the young players that came through last year are now, you know, a year further on in their development. It looks good for them. It'll be interesting to see. You suspect that they'll probably be stronger in the Charlotte Edwards Cup
mm-hmm.
than in the Rachel Hayer-Flint, which was the case last year. But we'll see. I think it's a big year for some of their players. I'd love to see Liberty Heap.
Yeah.
Really have a breakthrough this year and score a lot of runs. I'd be delighted to see that. But yeah, let's see how things go for them.
They're also the first region to have a full squad of professional players, which is a massive step, because they already led the way by, I think when it was the second year of contracts, all the teams had 5 pros and they funded 2 extra ones. Or it was 6 pros and they funded 2. I know they funded 2 extra mm-hmm. professionals. Which is really good. And of course, yes, they've bought sponsors on board and things like that. So they've just done a really good job of making it all good. Before we introduce our guest, we want to launch a big project that has taken many hours. And you may have heard of a brand called Panini. Well, you don't know that they don't exist anymore. It's now the Panini sticker book named after yours truly. We've called it like a
souvenir
album.
Mm-hmm.
So as we know, the regions are going to sadly finish this year. And so we thought they're probably going to be a little bit forgotten in about 10 years' time. Mm-hmm. So we're going to create like an archive of information. So some of it is historical stuff, but it's kind of a season preview for 2024 and your guide to the Charlotte Edwards Cup and Rachel Hayer-Flint Trophy.
Polly has done an amazing job in formatting this magazine. It's all electronic, so it's going out on our social media at some point in the next few days, so keep an eye out for it. And within this album, you have got pictures of all the players, profiles of all the players, dates and venues of all the matches in both the Charlotte Edwards Cup and in the Rachel Hayer-Flint. You've got profiles of the captains. You've got profiles of young players. You've got little bits of comment. It is absolutely amazing. It's so well put together. It is a collector's item and it's yours for free.
Yes, indeed. So it's based off Panini sticker book. So please don't sue me, Panini, because I tell you, those cards are absolutely identical. But it's absolutely fine. We are not making any profit. So
we're not selling stickers. The pictures are already in there.
So we do it for you. So you don't have to spend an absolute fortune and hunt around every Morrison's in your city to try and find cards. So actually we're doing everyone a favour. But we always want to do some sort of season preview. And of course we'll do a podcast, but I think it's quite nice to have a thing to remember the regions by, because they have existed for a number of years and they're no longer going to exist. And I just think it's quite nice to have that. And that is kind of, those players are going to be those last squads for the teams. Mm. Although I will say, at the time of publishing, the squads will be correct. These squads change every single day, in my view. 1 minute a player disappears, then 1 minute they sign an overseas player. So yeah, as far as I know, this information is correct. But yeah, it's just something, well, your idea, obviously. And I did all the work. Something we thought we'd do to preview the season. So I hope everyone enjoys it. And I think it should be out Saturday. I think
yes.
It's pretty much done. So
let us know what you think. It should be printer friendly. If you want to print off a copy, carry it around with you, that's fine. But Polly's a younger generation than I and is happy for these things to exist electronically.
Yeah, I also don't want to I mean, copyright and all that. So, you know, not. Also, price of printer ink nowadays. Is it more expensive than vintage champagne?
It is.
Yeah, no chance. Anyway, let's introduce our guest for this week because it actually links quite well to current women's cricket. So Ireland actually flew off today on the day of recording, the 11th. They flew to the UAE to start the qualifiers for the World Cup. And so we've got Ava Canning, who plays for Ireland. We've seen her play cricket. So it's actually like about a month ago we spoke to her. So it's been a while. I've been waiting to put this one out. But I hope you enjoy our chat with Ava. So what's your cricket story and how did you first get into cricket?
I started when I was about 10. There were some girls in school who were doing a summer camp at my local club, which is only about 2 minutes away from me. So yeah, I gave it a go, started there, and my dad's played since he was in school. So it kind of just made sense just to go down. And yeah, I loved it and have played ever since.
Yeah, I mean, that's the classic cricket story really, isn't it? And it's interesting that it's been part of your family for... you know, across two generations now. I guess it's one of those things that normal members of the public wouldn't really associate cricket with Ireland, but I guess its roots go back quite a long way.
Yeah, I think I'm quite lucky, like the clubs in Dublin especially are kind of grouped in a few certain areas and I'm quite near a few of them, so I'm quite lucky with that. But I think it definitely is growing and it's nice to see more girls and young kids getting into the sport, but it's definitely not one that people would think of straight away.
You started playing because your friend invited you down when you were about 10. How does that develop from that into becoming an international cricketer? What's the journey like?
I think it was just, I was quite lucky that around my age in the club, there was a lot of us that were quite into it and we all just loved it. We'd be down there in the winter training and then if I wanted to, dad was really good and would always come down with me. So I think it was just a thing of wanting to get down there and training and stuff and yeah, just went from there. I think once you enjoy the game and want to train, then it just goes from there really.
See, that's interesting because again, I hear that a lot from international players, and I think what international players need to know is that there's loads of us that would love to do that, but it doesn't work for us like it works for you because you've got to have some sort of talent as well.
I think honestly, like, there's nothing really that goes into, like, I think sometimes it just does happen. Like with me, I just happen to swing the ball. There's sometimes you just get lucky with things like that, but honestly, the more you train, I think the better. So yeah.
And what was that pathway like coming through from, obviously you play club cricket and then presumably you go through age group international cricket and then it's to senior internationals?
Yeah, so I started with Leinster stuff when I was younger, then did Ireland 15s. And then COVID kind of came around the time I was around the 17s. So that kind of, I did a bit of training with that, but I never played 17s, 19s, never did academy. I played a bit of domestic stuff here. We have a domestic competition, the Super Series. But apart from that, yeah, I broke my ankle coming back from COVID, literally first session back in training, just went over it. And then spent the winter doing drills and just working on my action just to be able to bowl again. You kind of need to just do it to get back to being fit. And then the next season, played a few more Super Series games and there was the first tour back, which was Scotland at home. And I'd originally said no because I wasn't on any squads and it clashed with my exams in school, which was kind of my priority because I wasn't on any teams. And then Ed Joyce pulled me to one side and basically said, look, any chance you can miss your exams because we're looking at picking you for that series. So went home and I basically said to mom, I was like, I need to talk to the school. I need, like, you don't get that chance very often. So school were really good and then played that series and that was it.
Oh, wow. So you missed exact, like, were they like important?
They weren't like state exams or anything. I was in second last year of school. So they were just like, yeah, go do it. And then, yeah, I was lucky.
So do you have to sit them at a different time or did you just get away with it totally?
I only ended up missing, the series was pushed back a week, so I only missed two and they were just like, we can see your grades, just go.
I'm a teacher, it's all made up anyway, don't worry about it.
Don't say that. So obviously, yeah, you went on that tour and what was it like making your debut? Because I guess it's such a big deal to play for your country and represent your country. And I think, was it strange that it was... You know, when you went back home and you were like, oh, I play cricket for Ireland. And a lot of people obviously don't know cricket. Was that a bit strange, or what was the whole thing like?
It was a bit of a shock because I hadn't been on, I wasn't on the performance squad, and I hadn't been around any of that before. So it kind of went from nothing to playing in the first game back, which was a bit crazy, to be honest. And I think if anything, it kind of helped to just be put straight into it. I didn't really know what the level was like. I didn't really know. So I was just going out there and just trying to bowl my best ball. So I think after the first game, it was when it kind of set in. I went into it not really with many expectations of playing, and then ended up playing all four. So I think it's one of those that it just kind of happens so fast. You find out a few weeks before that you're playing in this series and then get it done. The games are in such a short period of time. But yeah, it was a real honour to get to make my debut in that series.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, we've seen you play. Last summer, we came to Dublin to see Ireland play against Australia in the third ODI. My mum lives in Tipperary, so we were staying with my mum and nipped over to Dublin for the day. And what an amazing experience that must have been to have played against Australia.
Yeah, it's obviously so exciting to get to play them. I'd played them, they were over the year before, and we played them in the Northwest. But that was a tri series as well. So to get to have a series with them in Dublin, especially, that was my first home series that was in Dublin. Actually, I'd played at home before, but it had been in the north. So yeah, it's just crazy to get to play against that kind of standard and to get to see what it's like to play against those players. You see them on TV and you've sort of seen them all your life, and then to get to actually be out on the pitch and bowl at them is completely different. But yeah, it was so exciting to get to have them and host them at home.
And it was, what struck me is that, okay, there's a gap between Ireland and Australia, but it's not as big as you'd imagine. And actually, looking at Ireland batting first, you kind of held your own for quite a while there.
Yeah, I think it actually is really exciting. The more we get to play these countries and get to show off that the gap might not be as big as it seems. It's harder to show it in the past before the championship and stuff, when you were getting so fewer opportunities against those sorts of teams, where now you had the girls beat them in the warm-ups for the World Cup. They've had wins against the likes of South Africa. So getting to play teams like that more often actually does open the door to sort of show the improvements that we're making, which is really exciting.
And the other thing I remember about that game was that Sutherland and Litchfield opening up for Australia and then just won the game. Unbelievable. You know, both scored centuries. So you got to bowl against them both. Tell us a bit about what that was like and what they're like as batters and how we should get them out, because I'm not quite sure sure England know how to do that.
They are crazy talented. Like, even seeing how young Litchfield is, and even Sutherland as well, they are so talented. So I think they really showed us how good they are in that game. And I think we'd seen it in the first game more so that there are ways to get them out. But that day it was hands down, like, that was some of the best batting I've seen in person. So good.
Yeah, it's really nice to see when you see young players doing well. But when they're Australian, it's really not that nice to see. It's just slightly frustrating. Like, this is going to be the next 10, 15 years. You're just going to have to watch them get centuries, which is kind of annoying. But anyway, kind of back to Ireland. And Ireland awarded loads of contracts to players at all kind of different levels of contracts, which we've spoken about before, and we're actually really big fans of the way Ireland do it, that you've got kind of like education contracts where people can and study alongside, you've got retainer, non-retainer, all that sort of thing. So tell us a bit about being contracted for the first time, and you can say you're a professional cricketer.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I'm on an education contract at the moment, so that I can balance college with cricket, which is actually so nice to be able to have that comfort. And I suppose it just means that I know that any time I have outside of college and college work, I can actually put towards cricket, which is a relief, because a lot of my friends are having to work part-time jobs outside of college and to not have to balance a part-time job with cricket and college work. It's just such a relief. And it's so nice as well, especially with the girls who are full-time now, to see how much they've come on since being able to just put all their attention to cricket is really exciting. So I think it's great. A great initiative, the contract.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think I always, this is my dad moment really on the podcast, because I just think it worries me when you've got, you know, cricketers aged 16, 17 packing in an education in order to taking on professional contracts, and it seems really, really short-sighted to me. And I really wish in England that we offered something like education contracts, which would enable people to study and be professional cricketers at the same time. I know one or two people do it as well, because there's a bit of spare time and flexibility in their learning. But I think that would be a really important thing. Tell us what you're studying, by the way. What degree?
I'm in my second year of computer science.
Wow, good solid degree qualification. We like that very much.
Yeah, normally cricketers are like, oh, we're doing sports science or physio. Or
yeah, there's a lot of that. A lot of that.
It's nice to hear something different. So obviously you are doing a degree and you're playing cricket. What do you kind of see your future like? I know that's a question that, particularly, like, I always get that, what do you want to do in the future? That sort of thing. And it's an annoying question, but kind of, where do you see that going? Do you think you'll continue playing cricket alongside having another job, or would you want cricket to be full-time, etc.?
Yeah, I think definitely once the degree's over, I'd like to have a block of time to just play cricket. I think there's only so many years of your life you can just be a full-time athlete, so definitely gonna do that for a while. But then it's just nice to know that I have something to fall back on if something didn't go to plan, whether that's injury or selection or whatever it might be. So yeah, I think you're gonna make the most of being a full-time cricketer while I can, and then just having the option of something else to go to makes me feel a bit more secure with that.
And then in terms of Ireland, there are, you know, you've got a few days off at the moment, but I guess training is ramping up because there are some big tournaments ahead for you, aren't there? I'm thinking, of course, of the World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah, so we're kind of in the middle of a good block now. After Zim, just focusing on the qualifiers, and I think we all kind of in this block have individual things to be working on. So just trying to get everything ready. And that's obviously a massive tournament for us, wanting to make it to that next World Cup. So I think there's huge focus on that. And we're all training hard for the next little while before we head off to that.
Well, we have everything crossed for you, because we really, really hope Ireland are really successful at that tournament and go on to be successful at the World Cup.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I was going to kind of mention, we spoke to Shauna Kavanagh a couple of weeks back, and of course her career kind of spanned over a massive transition within Irish cricket. And of course now it's very normal for Ireland to qualify for World Cups and have lots of success. That's kind of more of an expectation. But when you were younger, were you aware of the women's team? Did you have any role models within the Ireland women's cricket team?
One of my first coaches in club cricket, I had a few, and then once I started getting into proper hardball cricket, I had Laura Delaney, who's the women's captain, plays in my club, so that there's not really anyone better that you could have to look up to in the Ireland women's team. But it was only when I got a bit older that I sort of got into, if they had a home international, I'd go and watch that, and there wasn't too much cricket on. But yeah, having someone like Dells to look up to was really good to have from the start.
Yeah, and of course WPL is on at the moment. And have you got any thoughts about franchise cricket? And is that something that you'd be interested in pursuing in the future?
I think in the future, definitely. At the moment, I'm happy just focusing on international stuff. But I know a lot of the girls are starting to see more names getting put forward and things like that, and starting to see more girls featuring in tournaments. So I think the more it kicks on, the better. And I think as that starts to grow and people get to see what the Irish team have, then I think that'll come on. But for the moment, I'm happy just focusing on international stuff.
Brilliant. Well, Ava, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us. It's been really, really good to catch up. All the best to you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and to the Ireland team, you know, work hard over the next few weeks, because we're rooting for you in those World Cup qualifiers.
Thanks so much.
Polly, this time next week, the season will be upon us.
It's a little bit crazy that's coming around so fast. Feels like we are still in the middle of winter. Although today it's been very, very hot. It's been perfect cricket weather.
I'm so excited. It feels like the whole summer is stretching ahead of us.
It does. It's a very, very nice feeling. I also love it when you see, like, Australia and New Zealand wrap up their summer, and you're like, you're going into winter. I mean, it's not going to be cold, but you're going into your winter and we're just getting started over here. That's quite a nice feeling.
Yes, and already got booked in for some matches later in the year, some international tickets.
Yeah.
In fact, the first international of the summer is here in Birmingham on the 11th of May, which is only a month away.
No way. It's a month. That is very soon. So I think next week we'll do a bit of a season preview. In the meantime, you can follow us on our social media. So our Instagram and TikTok is Naughty Child Podcast and our Twitter is OO Child Podcast.